Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by the 27th Annual Chico Art Center Open Studio Tour. This year's tour dates are October 17th and 18th and 24th and 25th, with locations in Chico, Oroville, and Paradise, with over 60 artists participating. The opening reception is 5 p.m. on Friday, October 16th at the Chico Art Center, 450 Orange Street. More information and maps by visiting chicoartcenter.com or by calling 895-8726. All right, you're tuned in to Love in the 21st Century, and tonight we're going to be talking with some special guests in our community about breast cancer awareness and about a particular event that's happening at the Sin of Cortez. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
And I figured we'd start maybe with the event so that people have an idea of what we're talking about and where it is, and then we can get a little bit into your stories. Does it sound good?
Perfect.
Awesome. So, Danielle, would you mind telling us about what's happening this month?
This month I am doing a month-long fundraiser for three women, two of whom are here with us tonight. And what I'm doing is I'm donating a portion of our sales every Wednesday towards their health care, as well as a raffle that I'm selling tickets for. The grand prize of the raffle is a one-week stay in Kihei on Maui. It's a beautiful home, three bedrooms, sleep seven, as well as multiple other raffle prizes that I've had many businesses donate. There's gym memberships, spa gift packages. I mean, so much. The community's been amazing.
And what has inspired you to host this event this month?
I've done two other fundraisers in the past in October for breast cancer, and I try to do something every year, and I was a patient of Jen and have gone to another fundraiser for her, and so I've just been thinking a lot about it the last few months of how I can help her individually instead of, you know, sending it off to a foundation. And so I approached her to see if she'd be interested in that, and she said she would, and then we talked about I wanted to do it maybe for a few other women. And I thought about maybe three, and we've found two other women, that are, you know, battling and, you know, have been battling breast cancer. And so they were happy to join in.
So this is the first time that you're actually, you know, the people that the funds are going to support.
Yes. And so what I've done in the past was just one specific day. We donated our portion of our sales. Our dial of our pancakes pink, and we all wore pink, and that alone, you know, was a decent contribution. But I wanted to do more, so instead of just doing one day, I decided to go all month and do one day every week, as well as other fundraising within the business to create more, you know, help for them.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's really amazing to be able to know the people, too, I'm sure, that you're directly affected.
Yeah, and, you know, it's can happen to anyone. It can happen to me, and so I just, it's one of those things where I would hope that someone would do something like this for me if I'm in the same situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and I was actually looking at statistics earlier today. When you say it can happen to anyone, literally, what I was reading was 1 in 8 women it can happen to. And hopefully we'll talk more about the stages as we go along. But that's a pretty high percentage, you know, when looking and thinking about the women that are in my life. Women and men that could be affected by breast cancer. So thank you so much for hosting this event. And thank you for reaching out to KZFR to make this happen as well.
Yeah, it's been great. Thank you.
Yeah. So, ladies, which one of you would like to start with sharing why you're here today?
Just my story.
Yeah.
So my name's Jen Sanchez, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer in April of this year. I felt an unusual area in my breast. I couldn't quite define it, but something just felt off. So my intuition led me to get it investigated. I went to my gynecologist, who couldn't feel a mass either, but thought that I should go ahead and pursue it since I'd felt a change. So I was actually quite surprised by the diagnosis, even though I'd been recommended to have a biopsy. It I wasn't nervous for it. It wasn't on my radar. But, of course, I think for most women it's not. So I had a lumpectomy. The cancer had made it to one lymph node, which means I had to do chemotherapy, which I just finished up last week. And through all this, we discovered I have a genetic mutation that makes me more susceptible to breast cancer as well as ovarian and a couple others. So next month I'll be having a double mastectomy and my ovaries out as well to decrease my risk of ovarian and breast cancer. And then that'll be followed by radiation.
Wow. So, it, like you said, it wasn't even on your radar at all. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sure we'll be getting into this in a little bit, too, is like how, what early detection plans can be there, and then how to listen to your own body. Like, obviously, you started to speak to your gynecologist and other professionals in your life, but how to really start tuning into your body so that you do get the medical attention that you need, because it sounds like what happened for you. So you started to pay attention, and even though it wasn't, the signs weren't showing up.
Right. So, you know, I'm in an interesting position because I'm a medical provider, and so I kind of was battling my intellect and my intuition because intellectually I couldn't identify something, but intuitively I kept going back to the same spot over and over again and trying to sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I had messages to get out in this, you know, first of all would be to trust our intuition and to investigate it and to follow through on it. And then because I got diagnosed with a genetic mutation, my other message would be to know your family history, because it turns out I had four women in my family with breast cancer that I didn't know about.
Wow.
So had I known that ahead of time, I could have found this genetic mutation before having cancer and could have taken some measures to either screen more often, because at 39 I wasn't due for mammograms yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'd known about this mutation, I would have started getting them much earlier, mm-hmm. as well as MRIs. And I could have done something prophylactically to prevent cancer if I so chose to do that.
All right. Yeah, definitely a lot of things that could have been done preventatively. How would one find out if they have this genetic mutation that you're referring to?
Well, so Dara is going to talk more about that.
Awesome.
I could talk about it right now if
yeah.
you like.
Okay.
So I work at Enloe Comprehensive Breast Care, and we do we get women referred to us for cancer risk assessment, and they are identified by their primary care provider usually as, you know, they may see multiple cancers on one side of the family, they may see multiple breast cancers. They may see a history of ovarian cancer in a family member. So it triggers, it's kind of like a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
And they get referred to us for a more comprehensive risk assessment. And my colleague and I, Barbara Clifford, we take a look at the family history in a bigger picture through three generations, and look at the types of cancers, when they were diagnosed, at what age was the person diagnosed, and we actually make recommendations for genetic testing and provide that in our clinic. So
so that's usually though after somebody's already been sort of in the path of having cancer.
No, these are for non-affected individuals. So these are people right. who have been identified by their primary care or their gynecologist as at risk.
Okay.
Either because there's, like I said, numerous cancers, numerous breast cancers, history of ovarian cancer in their family, and it's sort of like a red flag for them. And so they refer them to us for further investigation. We look at it closer, you know, and try to make an assessment for the patient and offer genetic testing for them.
If women are curious, are they able to go access those services themselves?
Not directly. We do advise that you go through your primary care provider or mm-hmm. a gynecologist, but certainly, you know, there's a few clinics in town, too, that you could go to and be referred to us. The Women's Health Clinic is one, the women's health specialist.
So there's some flags that would trigger referral to the breast care center. So if you have a family history of ovarian cancer, you mm-hmm. should discuss that with your primary care provider. Three or more women in your family with a history of breast cancer, especially if anybody was premenopausal under the age of 50. History of pancreatic cancer, melanoma, and prostate could trigger genetic testing. Male breast cancer,
Yeah, as well as anyone of Ashkenazi Jewish descent. They are at higher risk for being BRCA mutation carriers, as high as 1 in 40 are carriers.
Wow. Yeah. And could you mention the name of that center again, in case there's people that are listening that want to talk to their doctors about
Yes, that? I work at Enloe Comprehensive Breast Care.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So, Dara, would you like to share a little bit about your story and what
Sure.
brings you here tonight?
Yes, thank you. Let's see. My cancer was diagnosed in March of 2014. In February, I was in the shower and I could feel kind of a ridge in my breast when I was showering, and I honestly kind of just got out of the shower and didn't really think about it again. I mean, like Jen said, it's not really on our radar. We're young women, healthy women, no family history, no risk, you know, that you knew of. And so I sort of forgot about it. And then about a month later, it started to kind of hurt. And I, being a healthcare provider, doing lots of breast exams, I actually laid down and did a good breast exam and on myself and, you know, felt a very large ridge across the lower part of my right breast. So I immediately went and had a breast exam the next day and had a mammogram within a week. And, you know, they recommended a biopsy. Even at that point, I was doing some research and I saw that, you know, somewhat of like 70% of biopsies are benign. So I was still kind of going, you know, it's probably okay. I don't have any family history. I don't have a lot of risk factors. But the biopsy actually, you know, turned out to be cancer. It turned out to have a rather aggressive cancer called HER2 positive cancer. And HER2 is a protein that stimulates the growth of cancer. So you can get a large cancerous tumor that occurs within a short period of time. Because I had just had a mammogram, a normal mammogram the year before. I also had one lymph node that was involved. So I was advised to have chemotherapy. And actually, I had the same regimen that Jen had, which is 5 months of chemotherapy, 12 weeks of weekly chemotherapy, and 2 months of biweekly chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. And then I was also fortunate enough to receive because I had this HER2 positive disease, there's targeted therapy for me. So I actually had two other additional medications, IV medications. That one actually lasted a year. I just finished it in June. I went on to have a mastectomy, bilateral mastectomy, both sides, and 5 weeks of radiation therapy, which I completed in January of this year. So,
wow,
a long journey. It almost took about a year to finish. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now you are cancer free?
Yeah. You know, I mean, hopefully.
Yeah. That's an amazing story that you just shared.
Thank you.
There was something that you wrote in the piece that I read about that I found really startling, was about healthcare and about being employed through what I imagine is a healthcare industry, and then being told that they could not cover you under their insurance?
Yeah, you know, because of the length of time that it was going to take for me to be treated, which was, you know, the better part of a year, they couldn't guarantee, you know, they couldn't hold my job for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so without telling me as much, really, you know, I was let go. And as a result, I had to continue my healthcare benefits through COBRA, which is where you pay, you know, your own premium every month, which is quite high, you know, especially when one loses their income, you know, and they're on disability.
Right.
So, I found it very frustrating. And especially, you know, since I was working in healthcare, you know, that this is, it didn't seem fair. You know,
right.
Doesn't seem fair for anyone, really.
Would you mind, Danielle, sharing about the third woman that isn't here with us tonight?
Christy, she also was diagnosed with breast cancer, and She has three younger children and is from Orland and was a teacher at the continuation school there. She taught English, and she had great insurance in the beginning through her treatments, and then she was unable to keep her job as well. And just recently, she has lost her position. So she not only has insurance, but her children don't have insurance, and so she's having to have additional surgeries that are coming in the future, and she's uninsured and unable to work as well. So she's in a similar situation.
Wow. Yeah, crazy. I mean, with the amount of insurance bills and medical costs alone, on top of the cancer experience, I mean, it's just, it's great to know that there's people like you, Danielle, that are in the community that are showing support to some of the families that are going through this. And which leads me to ask a different question about your families and how maybe bringing this news was like. How, I mean, some, I don't know if all of you have children, but yeah, maybe if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about that experience and with your families.
Well, for me, it was perhaps the worst day of my life. I mean, I can honestly say that. It was the worst thing. And I have an 11-year-old and a 12-year-old. They were 10 and 11 at the time. My son immediately, you know, ran upstairs and started Googling, you know, chance of death with breast cancer. You know, my daughter was kind of, you know, she wanted to know if it affected her birthday that year, if we could still have her birthday party, you know. So they take it in different ways. You know, it was an awful, awful, awful day. You know, I think I actually kind of had two different days, one where I told them about my about my cancer, and then about a week later I found out just how bad my cancer was and how long it was going to take to treat it and what I was going to have to go through. And that was actually a second conversation, which was, you know, even worse. But they were very supportive. My daughter and son both, you know, most of my chemo was during the summer of last year, and they both came with me to the cancer center and went through chemo with me. They were, you know, well known in the cancer center in the infusion suite. My daughter would bring me tea. My son would play dominoes with me. You know, it was really amazing. They were great. And, but it was the worst thing to have to tell them. You know, it still breaks my heart, you know. But yeah,
absolutely. I relate to the idea of, I have a parent that is very ill and has been ill my entire life growing up, so I inquire what it must be like from the parental side of having to share that with your children, because you're right, like, your children taken differently, and I'm sure that, you know, your children are quite ecstatic that it's only been a year. Because, I mean, for you, it was, you know, an extensively long, arduous year, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But it's also, like, now you have the rest of your life. So mm-hmm. That's really amazing thing that not all people are granted.
Yeah.
Would you mind sharing?
Right. So for me, the beginning was so surreal, you know, and such a shock. I think my family was just shocked because I'm the healthy one. I'm the one that makes them eat their kale and their broccoli and doesn't let them have their Arizona teas and their sodas. And so the fact that mom could be sick was a little bit of a shock. I have a 12-year-old. He'll be 13 in a couple weeks. And then I have two 10-year-olds, and they're boys. So for me, I'm not sure they have... I'm not sure it's crossed their mind that mom might not live. Mm-hmm. And we certainly haven't brought that up and talked about it. But in our house, mom being sick and going through chemotherapy through the summer, too, mm-hmm. which the heat makes it really hard to get out and do anything with your family when you're on chemotherapy. Mm. So treatment's been rough, especially with three boys. They're active, they're busy, they're ready for mom to be back outside and playing basketball and taking them to do things. And we have the upcoming surgery, so getting through that.
Yeah, so still a lot of ways to go with the family and explaining through the process, it sounds like.
Right. And I, you know, they're boys. I'm surrounded by boys. I have three brothers. I have a husband. I have three sons. So, you know, breasts aren't necessarily something they all really want to talk about much.
Right. Right. Not yet. Yes. But, yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that eventually, in time, sharing with them the experience and what they're willing to be a part of, understanding in terms of, like, your own process. And I think that there's got to be a part of it that's nice that, like, there isn't that question of whether or not, you know, what's going to happen next, because they kind of have that faith in you.
Right.
You know, that mom's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. So, in a way, that can be a really loving and supportive thing that's going on. So, we're going to take a short break here, and then we'll get into talking about maybe some of the stages of breast cancer and some early detection plans that people can be doing, and just some signs that maybe those that are listening can be paying attention to, and all that kind of stuff, and talk a little bit more about the event that's still going on. It's all of October, right?
Yeah, all month.
Okay, yes. All month. So it's been going on, and it's still going on at the Santa Cortez Eat to Defeat. This is Love in the 21st Century, and we've been talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month and two women's stories about their personal experience with breast cancer, as well as an event that's happening at Santa Cortez. We are going to be right back with you here in a couple of minutes.
House Speaker John Boehner gave up his position because he couldn't stand the job anymore. Next in line was Representative Kevin McCarthy, who started running for the job but quickly backed off. Representative Paul Ryan says he's thinking about taking the job, even though he doesn't want it. What's at work here is the Crazy Caucus. At one level or another, nearly all Republican House members belong, but the caucus is driven by about 50 hyper-crazies who believe that the greatest problems facing our country are Hillary Clinton's emails, Planned Parenthood, the existence of public services, and the, quote, hordes of Mexicans who sneak into our country so they can vote for Democrats. It's the job of the House Speaker to try leading these mad dogs to an occasional bit of sanity. Who really wants to do that, or even thinks it's possible? Well, several of the mad dogs themselves say they should be put in charge. Daniel Webster says he's available. Not the smart guy who compiled the dictionary, but a Tea Party bozo from Florida. Bill Flores, a little-known Tea Party know-nothing from Texas, says he would unite the House by getting all the members to, quote, spend enough time on our knees praying for each other. That's silly, but the idea of keeping lawmakers on their knees is appealing. Mike Pompeo of Kansas, a prince of right-wing pomposity who was elected by the billionaire Koch brothers to be their personal representative in Washington, says he's ready to lead the House toward a Koch-headed plutocracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's pathetic. But wait, we have another surprising choice. It's a little-known fact, but the Speaker of our House of Representatives does not actually have to be a member of Congress. So why don't we choose someone like a kindergarten teacher, a minimum wage worker, an organic farmer, or a circus ringmaster to run the show? Or maybe a group psychologist is what the place needs.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right, you're listening to Love in the 21st Century, and we are talking with Danielle of Sin of Cortez, and Dara and Jennifer, who are here sharing their stories of breast cancer. Thank you, ladies, so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And as we mentioned before we started, before we went to the break, I wanted to chat a little bit about sort of what is breast cancer when we're talking about, you know, just that kind of general definition, and then the stages of breast cancer, because I think that you both mentioned different stages when you were talking about your stories, which can be confusing to a lot of people that don't necessarily know anything about breast cancer.
Sure. So staging is based on the tumor size and whether the tumor has spread to lymph nodes, and whether or not the disease has spread to distant organs. So you can be a stage 0, a stage 1, a stage 2, or stage 3, or stage 4. And stage 0 is disease that's actually confined to the ducts of the breast, and it doesn't spread out of the ductal system. Stage 1, 2, and 3 is invasive breast cancer. And again, it varies on the size of the tumor and how far it's spread into the lymph node system. Stage 4 disease is metastatic disease. There are some that are some women who are diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer from the start, and that is about 6 to 10% of all cases. Metastatic disease means the cancer is spread to a distant organ. The most common sites are the lungs, the liver, the brain, and the bones. Stage 4 disease is not curable. It's more like living with a chronic disease.
And so the stage 4 that you're referring to, it actually starts in the breast and then spreads to those other areas that you're referring to. What were those four areas?
The bones, the liver, the lungs, and the brain.
Wow.
And about 20 to 30% of all cases of breast cancer, regardless of the stage, will eventually metastasize and become a stage 4.
And as you said, so that people could actually be living with this level of disease. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're...
You know, I looked up some of the statistics on the median or average survival, and it really is only three years is the average survival after you've been diagnosed with metastatic disease. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly outliers. I mean, there are women that have lived much longer than that.
Right. So... Yeah, that's not very high statistics there after the fourth year.
Right.
So the idea would then be to catch it before it gets to stage 4.
Right, right.
And to what point, to what stage do women usually get diagnosed? Like, where is the, like, do you know any statistics around what the most common stage is that women come in?
No. I mean, every woman's different, and some cancers are felt with self-exam. Some cancers are felt when a woman is having her yearly breast exam with her, you know, care provider, her primary care provider. Some cancers are not felt, and they're just found on mammogram. You know, that would be a reason to have your screening mammogram, like we were talking about earlier. So really, you know, I don't know what the statistics are. I did, you know, pick up that 6 to 10% of all cases, new cases, are stage 4 to start, but I don't know how it breaks down otherwise.
Right. That's pretty high.
Yeah.
6 to 10.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can have a large tumor that hasn't spread, and you can have a small tumor that has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many factors to breast cancer. So like Dara and I both have breast cancer, but we have different kinds of breast cancer. Mine is estrogen and progesterone positive. So hormones feed my cancer. But mine is HER2 negative, which makes it a little less aggressive because it doesn't have that.
It doesn't grow as rapidly as mine did.
So my tumor was actually fairly small, but it still made it to a lymph node.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's interesting once we get into breast cancer and we learn more about it. Because so many women survive it, I think it's easy. I mean, especially for me at the beginning, it was easy to say, oh, it's breast cancer. At least it's not pancreatic cancer or ovarian cancer. But as Dara said, 20 to 30% of the time, even when it's caught early, it can spread to distant organs. So it's kind of scary as you get into your treatment and you realize that statistic is still out there.
Absolutely.
And we don't know what causes it to spread. I mean, we don't know what, if there's genetics involved, if it's environmental, if it's a combination of the two, you know, I think that's not really clearly understood.
You have any theories on what you feel like spreads it?
No.
No? No?
I mean, I think Butte County, there is a little cluster, and especially of, I mean, that's just anecdotally for me, you know, in my friends in our 40s, Jen 39, but I don't know, you know, I mean, we live close to a lot of farming, who knows?
Right.
Who knows?
I could make some theories. So what resources have helped you in the process of just maybe informing your family, like any family support systems that are out there, as well as just some actual resources that you've utilized in the community?
Well, go ahead.
Well, resources in the community, I mean, for me, I found an oncologist that I feel really confident in, and I got second opinions down at Stanford, but those opinions matched everything I was getting here. So reaching out and feeling really confident in my healthcare plan was important for me, especially at such a young age. We want me to live another 50 years, so we
Absolutely.
Want... I've been saying through this that I might normally lean towards the liberal, but through this, I've liked the conservative approach, the attack it and get it taken care of. So I go up to Feather River Hospital. I see Dr. Maj. They've been a great resource for me. As far as family support, it's just been, we've talked about this before, accepting help. You know, it's hard as moms, as independent women. You know, we both are professionals, we support our families, and to all of a sudden be in a dependent position and a fragile position, mm-hmm. A lot of this journey has been being willing to accept, you know, the help and the love that people out there want to give us and support us through it. Like Danielle and what she's doing for us has been really important through this journey.
Yeah, I mean... When I was going through chemotherapy and treatments, I had people bringing me meals once a week. I had a fundraising campaign where I was able to help pay some of those initial medical bills. I don't have any close family nearby, but I mean, my friends are my family. And I think one thing that cancer taught me is that I didn't realize how loved I was.
Yes, definitely.
And huge support through the kids' school and through my friends and, you know, networking and the fundraising page and all of that. It was huge. So,
what type of fundraising did you do before this?
I did a GoFundMe page. I had a, we're talking about insurance. I had a major medical plan because I wasn't, when I signed up for my health insurance, I don't have any chronic disease, so I'm not going to the doctor. I was only doing preventative care. So I signed up for like the, what is it called? An HSA plan with a large deductible. So my total out of pocket was close to $10,000 in one calendar year. And so, you know, 3 months going in, I started getting these bills and it's like, oh, you know, I got to deal with these. So I did a GoFundMe page and, for that first year. And then, you know, I went into a second calendar year. And so that medical debt is, you know, still looming. I pay it every
Absolutely.
Month, you know.
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. Medical expenses are probably amongst the highest of debts that people in the United States experience. So in terms of prevalence, do you know any statistics on what the prevalence is across the board, maybe hereditarily?
Well, hereditary cancer only is really about 5 to 10% of all cancers.
Okay.
So... if you look at a pie chart, really about 5 to 10% is hereditary. About 25, 30% is familial, meaning, you know, there's not necessarily a genetic component to it, but there is a family history. And we don't know why that is. It might be a gene we don't understand yet. It might be environmental. It might be where they grew up. It might be lifestyle. You know, did they all eat poorly? Were they overweight? Or, you know... did they have other risk factors that kind of ran in their family? And then the largest portion of the pie, so the rest of it, maybe like 65, 70% of the pie, is sporadic. There's no family history. There's no genetic mutation. We don't know why it occurs. And that can be very frustrating for women because they want, you know, they want a reason. Why did this happen to me? You know,
right.
And
Most
we don't. Yeah, and we don't know the answer. So, BRCA1 and 2 mutations. These are they just stand for breast cancer 1 and 2. These mutations have a high risk of breast cancer and ovarian cancer, up to 87% risk of breast cancer, and up to I believe 46% in ovarian cancer. So. A very large risk. And so we, at where I work, we're trying to capture these women in our community so that we can follow them under high-risk surveillance and we can talk to them about prophylactic mastectomy and oophorectomy, which is removing the ovaries, before they develop these cancers. So like I said, in our clinic, we're trying to identify those women ahead of time by getting them into our clinic, you know, our high-risk clinic. So,
and you did say earlier that there was a particular ethnicity that's more common to have that.
Yeah, it's a one in 40 women will carry of Ashkenazi Jewish descent, and people often don't know what that is, but it's basically every person who's Jewish in the United States. So anyone whose family came from like Eastern Europe, that kind of thing, who have of Jewish descent, and they have a high prevalence of BRCA1 and 2 mutations.
And is there any other ethnicity that you're aware of that has a higher prevalence of breast cancer, or is it kind of even across the board?
Well, African-American women have a higher risk of aggressive breast cancer. They also have a higher risk of dying from breast cancer.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that kind of gets us into talking about early detection, you know, that since it is, you know, the information that I found was 1 in 8. Does that sound accurate to you, 1 in 8?
Yeah.
So, being a woman myself, it's definitely, you know, something that doesn't cross my mind very much. Actually, my mother was talking to me about it recently. She's a nurse at NLO as well. And we were talking about animals and how, like, sometimes animals can have an acute awareness that something's going on in your body maybe before you do or you feel something, sort of like how you had mentioned, Jennifer, that you kept going back to the same place. You just had that intuition to go there, but the medical showings weren't exactly telling you that that information was accurate, but your intuition kept leading you there. Well, my mom was having this experience with our dog, and he kept going to the same place, and she was like, you know, she doesn't feel anything, and but she's, you know, having a desire to go get it checked out more because that intuitive sense that some animals have more so connected strongly than we do, because we get kind of disconnected, we get up in our heads and think, you know, we don't maybe know what's going on with our body. So besides just, you know, really tuning into our intuition and our gut, is there's an actual plan we can come up with, right? An early detection plan?
Well, the screening guidelines actually used to say that age 40, it was kind of just blanket, age 40, if you are at average risk, go get your screening mammogram done and, you know, do it annually. But actually today in the news, the American Cancer Society just came out with some changes to that. And what they're recommending is that annual screening mammography be initiated for most women, average risk women, at age 45. Continuing annually until the age, I believe, 55, at which time you can go every 2 years. And then continuing your mammograms until you have reached an age, you know, that's kind of the upper age. It's basically, if you have less than 10 years of projected lifespan left, you can stop doing your mammograms, is kind of how they have it written.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, people are different, you know. One 86-year-old may be completely different from another 86-year-old. I mean, you know, you kind of have to assess that when talking to them. You can have very healthy, vibrant 86-year-olds who look more like 60 and feel more like 60. So, right. You know, it's definitely individual. But I think what, you know, there's definitely a lot of hoopla in the news today. I think what it also says is between the ages of 40 and 45, that it become more individualized, that you talk to the woman about her risks, you talk about the pros and cons of mammography, because the idea is that these mammograms potentially have more false positives, and you're creating more anxiety, more need for biopsies that turn out to be negative. So are they doing more harm than good?
Right.
So I think what the screening guidelines are trying to say is that now between the ages of 40 and 45, that we really we individualize it and we look more at the patient instead of just having like this cookie cutter response. Okay, you're 40, it's time for your mammogram. You know, so we look at risk factors, we look at family history, we, you know, we look at it closer.
Absolutely. So in terms of early detection plan, it's sort of, like you said, individualized, and then not really starting up into their, I'm sorry, I didn't catch the eight organization that decided
the American
not,
Cancer Society.
American Cancer Society.
Yeah, it just
can't.
It's all over the news today because right. you know it does strike a chord with some people because you know some like Jen was 39.
Right, that's what I was actually asked. How
I
do
was
you
43.
Feel about the fact that it's like pushing back the age? Though that's not what you're personally experiencing.
Well, remember I'm falling into that 5% of the population that has that hereditary risk for breast cancer.
Right.
So. My experience doesn't necessarily mean I think, you know, overall we need to do more mammograms. Mm-hmm. I mean, my message would be listen to your body. The recommendations are to move away from teaching women about self-breast exams and doing clinical breast exams, but I personally would disagree with that. As far as early detection goes, I don't think it ever hurts a woman to know her body better. And to be able to pick up a change and to listen to her intuition. And as a provider, I don't think it ever hurts us to be able to do thorough physical exams.
Absolutely.
You know, the recommendations are moving away from that. But I would say, as far as early detection goes, you know, women doing self-breast exams, getting their regular annual exams, and having a conversation about their history and knowing their family history. Like I said, that would be one of my biggest messages because I didn't know mine. Mm-hmm. You know, so knowing, like Dara said, 3 generations of your family history, you know, starting... do you have them start with grandparents?
You know, we start with their parents, their siblings, then we look at cousins, then we go up and look at grandparents, and, you know, and as much as we can get from the patient.
So actually writing down that family tree mm-hmm. and calling those people and asking their history. Mm-hmm. Because I had 3 cousins that I didn't even know existed that actually had breast cancer. But once I wrote down the family tree, I learned those cousins existed and I learned that they had breast cancer.
Good information. So definitely knowing your family history, being aware of what's going on with your body. One of the things that a nurse practitioner pointed out for me recently was in doing the self-exam is that the more you become acquainted with your own body, the more aware you're going to be when something's not in alignment. Mm-hmm. So if the first time you check is when something feels out of alignment, then you don't really have a base to compare it to what it feels like when everything's good. So I can understand the need to just really know your own body and how sometimes it might get flared into something larger if you're unfamiliar with what's going on.
And what I always tell patients is that your breasts are very active organs. Just, you know, they're changing throughout your monthly cycle. And, you know, so it's important to know mm-hmm. what they feel like at different times of your cycle as well. And so I encourage women to do, you know, breast exams, definitely. And then I'd also like to point out that, you know, we're talking about early detection and mammograms. You know, I had had a normal mammogram the year before when I was 41, and I had skipped 42, and in the beginning of, you know, 2014, I was 43. I just turned 43. So, you know, the mammogram really didn't detect anything with me. You know, I mean, I found it myself. So I'm not saying that mammograms are, I mean, it's the gold standard, it really is, but, you know, I just want to also say that just, you know, self-awareness, self-breast exam, knowing what's your normal, paying attention to your body is so important, you know.
You're saying don't rely on...
Yeah, don't rely on anyone.
Just because you had a normal mammogram, don't listen to what your body's telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Or,
absolutely.
Yeah, don't
tune
don't
in.
Ignore it.
I mean, don't ignore it.
Yeah.
We all got you. Tune in to your body.
Listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we're done here, I want to talk more about the event that is happening right now that's helping to raise funds for the two of you as well as an additional woman who's living with breast cancer, helping to pay some medical costs as well. So maybe we can tell our listeners some more information about that and some thank yous to people that have been donating.
Yes, we've had an outpour of people, businesses in town that are donating towards this cause. So every Wednesday, which happens to be tomorrow, I'm donating a large portion of our sales towards their health care. And so we have 2 more Wednesdays this month to get in there, this Wednesday and next Wednesday. And I'm also selling raffle tickets every single day at Cine Cortez. Like I said, the grand prize is a week's stay in the Dolphin House in Kihei on Maui. It's beautiful. And then we have also some other donations. We have t-shirts made. You can come in, buy them for $15. All the sales are going towards their health care. The Recognition Products was good enough to print them for us. They also provided banners. We've had some large donations. Northgate Aviation donated. Chico Racquet Club and Resort has donated 3 months membership as a prize. We have multiple salons. Amy and Mika at The Vine have donated things. Nurture Skin and Body, Cal Java, JS Strength and Conditioning, Radical Reductions, Morgan Chantel Photography, Hugh Ski Hut. You know, there's just been so much. Sierra Golf has a driver they're donating as a gift. And multiple restaurants, Beatniks, Rice Bowl, Raw Bar, Outback, Bass Norte, just Crush, Farwood, and Orland. It just goes on and on. So the tickets are $5, or you can get 5 for $20. And, you know, we're pretty much selling them in the restaurant. So everyone is going to have a great chance to win a prize, definitely. And all profit, every dollar that you spend on a raffle ticket goes towards their health care. And there's one more thing about the Dolphin House I wanted to mention. Fred Hayden's local. He lives up in Paradise. Just a wonderful person, has donated his home, as well as donating, if anyone wants to rent his home, he will donate an additional $200 towards their health care. If anyone wants to book a room or book his home for a week in the future, you don't have to pick dates. All you have to do is contact him, tell him you heard about it, let him know about that you're calling because of Sin of Cortez, and you can just put your deposit down, and whenever you decide to go on vacation, you can get the room later or the house later. So that's another way you can give, by going on vacation. So $200 per week will be donated as well.
Absolutely. Two amazing ways to donate to a very worthy cause, and also enjoy yourself in the process, because eating at Sin of the Cortez or participating in the raffle, it's a win-win situation.
Yes.
So thank you so much, ladies, for joining me tonight. Is there anything that you want, any last words that you might want to share with somebody that's in, that may be in your same experience right now?
I just want to say thanks to Danielle for doing the fundraiser. You know, she's just been great and very motivated, and I'm a big supporter of local businesses and local farms, and I love this idea of local supporting local. And like Dara said, you get, you know, a few months into treatment and all of a sudden you're not working and the collectors start calling for those medical bills. So fundraisers like this help us kind of take a breath and finish what we need to do to get better. So, you know, my advice for women would be to accept that help that's out there, that our community and our friends and our family are wanting to give.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say, you know, reach out. Don't be afraid, because people want to help, you know.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Well said. Reach out to the community. It is around and wants to help and support you in the process. These are three women that have experienced this here in our community, but 1 in 8 women. So there's definitely lots of women out there that you may know that are in this similar experience. And so this is some information that you can share with them. If not for your mother, your sister, your girlfriend, somebody that you know have had experienced this in their life. And this is an opportunity to share the good fortune and pass it on. So come to Sin of Cortez, support the event that's going on, Eat to Defeat Wednesdays, all day Wednesdays at Sin of Cortez. And then any day you can buy a raffle ticket at Sin of Cortez. Have a beautiful evening, and Ecotopia will be coming up next. Better.
will survive it.
A suitable song for the show we just had, Love in the 21st Century, talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, Survivor. These ladies are surviving their experience with breast cancer and being willing to share it on air. Very brave women indeed. A couple of things coming up here that I want to mention to you. Brothers Comatose, this Thursday, October 22nd, Chico Women's Club. It is a fundraiser for KZFR.org. Check that out. And then Wake of the Dead will be coming up next after that. It's The Reckoning, Friday, October 30th, for maybe an early Halloween experience. Again, another KZFR event. You can find out more information on the KZFR.org page. So if you have any questions about that, go ahead and check out the KZFR.org page. You can also give us a call at the office. 895-0131 is the studio number. If you have any questions tonight, you can give us a call and we will do our best to answer about these events that are coming up. There's also a Wednesday afternoon market that happens on 16th Street that'll be having a social tomorrow afternoon. So if you haven't got your vegetables yet, come by. It's going to be at the end of 16th Street and Chestnut. And that is a farmer's market that is year-round and is a nice addition to the Barberhood neighborhood. Come check it out and support the growth of this new market in this area. Again, that's on 16th and Chestnut. It's called Sochi South Chico Farmer's Market. Here is a little information on Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
One in eight women will be diagnosed with breast cancer. That means that if we haven't already, most of us will be exposed to breast cancer in some way, either directly or through a loved one or friend. There is good news, though. The survival rate is increasing thanks to better treatment and research. The more women know about breast cancer, the sooner it can be detected and treated. The National Breast Cancer Awareness Month program is dedicated to increasing awareness about the importance of early detection of breast cancer through a nationwide campaign. This program started as a week-long campaign in 1985 with two founding members. Today, the American Cancer Society is one of many national public service organizations, professional associations, and government agencies that form the NBCAM Board of Sponsors. During October, which is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month, the member organizations of the Board of Sponsors join forces to spread the message that early detection of breast cancer, followed by prompt treatment, does save lives. According to the American Cancer Society, a woman in the United States is diagnosed with breast cancer every 3 minutes. You should be checked by a doctor every 3 years if you're under the age of 40, and every year above the age of 40. But also do frequent self-exams. A fact sheet on breast cancer and how to do the self-exam is available through the National Breast Cancer Foundation. 178,480 women in the United States were found to have invasive breast cancer in 2007. About 40,460 women will die from that disease this year. Right now, there are about 2.5 million breast cancer survivors in the United States alone. Over 2,000 are men. 2,000 men per year receive the same diagnosis as women. Breast cancer, as with most all cancers, does not discriminate. More than 80% of breast cancer cases are discovered when a woman does a self-exam and finds a lump. Women in the United States have the highest incident rate of breast cancer in the world. But in the last few years, the numbers of death from breast cancer have declined, and much of this is attributed to preventative care and early detection. So please, make sure you're doing your regular self-exams and that you're spreading the word to your loved ones to do the same. Empower yourself with knowledge.